south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You longtime listeners know that I recommend that you watch the Latin American 6 and 9 o'clock news, the local news, though I only can take it in small doses myself. Sure, it's an embarrassment, high school quality, amateurish at best, but it does offer a nice glimpse into what's happening on the street in local areas. Suffice it to say, for green and newbie gringos, it's a great idea. It's too bad that gonna-bes and wannabes up in the States just can't tune in to one of the local TV news stations. That would be really cool, but just not possible. Local Latin TV stations don't stream their feeds on the internet, not yet anyway. I mean, really, who cares about what happens on, let's say, the streets of Tegucigalpa, Honduras, unless you actually live there? By the way, it takes a long, long time for a gringo or expat to be able to pronounce Tegucigalpa correctly, which is why all gringos and expats in Central America call it simply Tegucigalpa. By the way, there are thousands of Latin cities and places that gringos consistently mispronounce. Thankfully, Latins just smile or even chuckle a bit. They cut us a lot of slack. It's part of the gringo advantage. So don't be embarrassed if you feel you're going to massacre some local name or landmark. Just give it your best shot and notice how the Latins around you start to smile. Now, I mentioned many times before, no matter where you are in Latin America, they're going to have the TV on. And it's getting to the point, just like in the 70s, 80s, and 90s in the States, seems to be a TV in every room. I know that hardly seems possible in countries where the minimum wage is $300 or $400 a month, but the thing is, though a house might have a flat-screen TV that's going to be in the sala, that means living room, so might some of the other rooms, like the kitchen, bedrooms, even the maid's quarters, if they have one. So again, how is that possible in a house that might just have a tin roof and no hot water? Well, let's put it this way. Did you ever wonder where those big, heavy, boxy, pre-flat-screen TVs went? Well, it seems like somehow they've all made their way down here to Latin America. In fact, with the poor, lower middle and middle class Latins, they're standard issue. Oh, and by the way, it seems like in every middle class and lower middle class neighborhood, you'll find any number of hole-in-the-wall appliance and TV repair shops. So all those boxy old pre-1990 TVs are constantly being brought in and repaired. So anyone armed with $20 or $30 can walk out with one of those big old boxy units and a 30-day guarantee. But I digress. Where was I? Oh, yeah. We were talking about local Latin TV. Now, last Sunday on the local news, I saw a special report. This one was titled, Castiga Maya. What that means is Mayan punishment. Meaning they even have a word for a certain kind of punishment I spoke about on previous shows, where the pueblo, that is, the citizens of a small city or town, take the law into their own hands and punish local criminals themselves. Now, note, the local citizens aren't as trigger-happy as you think. It's not like a mob suddenly forms and goes after a guy because he's committed a crime. The so-called Castiga Maya, the Mayan punishment, only happens after the local populations call the cops a number of times on a person and get no results, so they get frustrated and take the law into their own hands. Actually, there's a kind of method to the madness. Oftentimes, the offended person or persons or family will get together with the elders in the town and they'll decide it's time. Then they'll march on over to the person's house, drag him out, and haul him to the central park, the town square. Now note, with the name Maya attached to this kind of punishment, you have to know that the town that it's happening in is mostly indigenous. Now, as with most Latin American countries, a lot of the small towns out in the boonies are populated mostly by indigenous people. It's easy to tell how indigenous by the amount of colorful indigenous clothing the people are wearing. Each color scheme, of course, denoting a distinct tribe and distinct language spoken by that tribe. So the indigenous people living in those towns speak Spanish and their own language too. By the way, they know most Latinos speak exclusively Spanish and so do gringos too, so they use their own language many times when they want to communicate without us knowing what they're talking about. I've personally experienced that phenomena many times. Now, for example, in a country like Guatemala, it's got about 25 separate indigenous groups, meaning 25 different sets of colorful clothes and 25 different languages. Now, for us gringos and expats, that's all quite confusing. First of all, I've never met a gringo who could speak an indigenous language. In fact, I've never met a gringo who could tell a particular indigenous group by the clothes they wear. However, indigenous people themselves are very tuned in to those things. In fact, there's a lot of prejudice, racism, and fighting between indigenous groups. It's been going on for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. In fact, before the Spanish conquistadores came and did their own brand of raping, pillaging, and looting, the local indigenous tribes were constantly at each other's throats. In fact, I've never known a single Latino person, a non-indigenous person, who could distinguish between the various indigenous tribes. Now, most indigenous towns are noted for one particular tribe. They don't tend to mix much. In fact, some small and medium-sized towns in the boonies may be 80, even 90% indigenous, and practically all of one tribe. Though it sounds like a bad cliche, most gringos and expats have no way of telling the particular tribes apart. The local indigenous people, man, they can spot someone outside their tribe in a second. Anyway, that TV special report I was talking about was describing a phenomena here in Central America known as Castiga Maya. That's Mayan punishment. Now, you longtime listeners will recall that a few times on local television, I've seen some guy getting whipped in a Central Park with a huge throng of indigenous people around. I mentioned you'd see things like that on the 6 o'clock news once in a while. Oddly enough, during these events, the police are never around. Isn't that funny? Anyway, you don't see that happening in big cosmopolitan Latin cities. It's mostly confined to small towns out in the boonies, mostly towns of maybe 500 to 10 or 20,000 people. Now, you'll find so-called educated Latin journalists and writers. I'm talking about the so-called upper classes who consider themselves non-indigenous, though most of them do have at least a small amount of indigenous blood in them, or they would look like Europeans, not short and dark. But they'll never admit to any indigenous blood. They'll always say they have Spanish blood. Man, if I've heard that broken record once, I've heard it a million times. Which kind of gives you an idea of the classism and racism you have to deal with down here. Anyway, the middle, upper, and wealthy class Latinos always distance themselves from the indigenous populations, even though somewhere along the genetic line they've got some indigenous blood in them. So in the media, you'll hear some righteous indignation, especially from so-called educated Latins who publish op-ed pieces in the local rags. They take a righteous stance and poo-poo the idea of indigenous people taking the law into their own hands. Meanwhile, expats and gringos who live here in Latin America, as well as the average Latin guy on the street, they say, more power to the indigenous. Let them self-police. Let them have the Mayan punishment. It seems to work. Why not? The pusbag bureaucrats and lard-ass cops are useless. Meanwhile, idiot first world do-gooder countries like Japan, South Korea, US, Switzerland, Sweden, etc., they regularly donate huge amounts of money and brand new fleets of cars and pickups to Latin police departments, always with great fanfare and publicity. Of course, never mentioning the reason why they need all that new equipment. Basically, because the cops ruined and ran into the ground the last batch of vehicles that was donated just a few years earlier by the same idiot first world do-gooder governments. I've seen that happen over and over again. Anyway, what struck me so much about this special report was just how widespread this so-called Castiga Maya is. Of course, when we're talking about Mayans, we're talking about Central America here. But the exact kind of punishment exists in the smaller, mostly indigenous pueblos in South America, too. That would be Castiga Inca, or the Incan punishment. Anyway, this program showed quite a few diverse punishments in various town squares throughout Central America. I'd say the highlight of the show, and what drew the biggest crowd, was when a young lady was the object of the punishment. She looked like she was around 20 years old. She'd stolen some handcrafted leather and cloth items from an indigenous co-op, and the co-op ladies were out to get her. So there she was in the Central Park, on her knees in her indigenous getup, and about 10 feet away, there were around 15 indigenous women standing in line, waiting their turn to whoop her with a bamboo stick. And while that went on, the woman reporter was explaining how when someone in a pueblo gets caught repeatedly stealing or assaulting or sexually molesting someone, they get that person's family together and let them take turns whacking her or him in the public square. And she said, because they're family, they usually don't lay into them too hard. In other words, they don't put too much muscle behind the blows. Then when they're done, next up comes the person or persons that were victims of the crime. For example, if a little store or tienda has been robbed, they'll let the owner get in his or her licks, which could be a lot harsher and thus more painful. Now, in this case, because the young lady stole from an indigenous co-op, somewhere around 15 pissed off women got a piece of her. Now, the news reporter did point out that this kind of punishment isn't vetted out after the first offense, because there usually has to be multiple offenses before the neighborhood gets riled up enough to get into the act. Meanwhile, while this report was being shown, you could see at the bottom of the TV screen continuous tweets and Facebook postings from the viewers at home. Wouldn't you know it, the comments were running 9-1 in favor of the indigenous people and this kind of punishment. So yes, occasionally this kind of stuff goes on here in Latin America. And of course, so-called educated Latin psychologists and such will poo-poo the idea and call it medieval. Oh, and she said in that television piece, only about 1 in 20 or so of these reported incidents result in a fatality. Now, if you read the Latin newspapers, you'll hear them call these things lynchings. So when they translate these articles to English and they make it up to the first world media, they use the word lynching. However, that's a complete misnomer because they don't actually lynch anyone, not like in a John Wayne movie. So if a bad guy gets stoned or whipped or kicked around in a public square, they'll call that a lynching. Don't ask me why. So normally, it's a very controlled situation and the guy or gal will get whipped in the public square and it's over. But if they take off running, that's when the stoning and even worse things can happen. So if one tries to get away, tries to evade the punishment, that's when things can get out of hand. So these things are generally not fatal, but do produce a very strong warning to would-be bad guys. Then to sum it up, the reporter said, in the big city, where people hear about such things but never see them firsthand, they assume if you live way out in the boonies in a pueblo with a big indigenous population, it's kind of like the Wild West. And though the fact is these things happen on occasion, they almost never occur as a regular thing in any particular pueblo. So when you see an event like that highlighted on the 6 o'clock news, it's almost never at the same pueblo. As one indigenous elder said in the broadcast, a lesson like that lasts a long, long time. Sometimes years and years go by between incidents because people have long memories. In fact, he said it's good for young people to see that, especially young boys who are prone to mischief. It puts them on their best behavior. All right, a little Latin and indigenous sociology there for you for what it's worth. By the way, to my knowledge, and almost everyone else I've ever spoken to, there's never been a single expat or gringo who's been beaten, whipped, or stoned in any central plaza in Latin America. Though there's always a first time, and I'm sure some of them deserve it. Especially the handful of gringos and Europeans I've read about over the years who were clandestinely filming kiddie porn here in Latin America. And unfortunately, when they got caught, they were simply deported back to their home countries for trial. However, I think in cases like that, there should be mandatory lynching, don't you? The John Wayne movie kind. Okay, that said, the inquiries are trickling in, asking about my upcoming January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. It'll start Saturday evening, January 6, 2018, through January 11th. And like I said, if the world doesn't implode by then, it just might. The seminar will be held in and around Guatemala, Central America. Why Guatemala? Because it's way off the gringo tourist trail. And people ask me all the time, why do I like to be off the gringo tourist trail so much? I say it's because you've absolutely got the strongest gringo advantage going. And what does that do? Well, that means if you were Joe or Jill average up in the States, let's say a solid 5 or 6 on the 10 scale, in brains, looks, determination, creativity, whatever, suddenly, down here, you're a 7 or an 8 in all those departments. I know, there's nothing fair about it, but who says life is fair? That's just the way it is. So if you came to Latin America, where would you rather be, where a whole lot of gringos have diluted that advantage? And even though we bring down a lot of dough, a lot of expertise, and do a lot of good things for the locals, we also tend to raise the cost of living dramatically, which jades the locals, and, well, let's just say we quickly begin to wear out our welcome with the locals. Now, if you don't believe me and you want to see proof in action, just go to International Living's website and visit 2 or 3 of their top gringo expat retirement destinations. You'll see. So anyway, if you want to get on the early bird waiting list for my upcoming January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And I'll send you all the info and updates, as well as a few documents and reports on how to get your Guatemalan residency started while you're down here at the seminar. In fact, I'd say about half the people that have been coming to the seminars lately have been doing just that, since Guatemala has one of the easiest and cheapest Latin residency programs, and after 5 years, you qualify for nationality and that all-important second passport. Then after that, if you feel like divorcing Uncle Sam or just flipping him the hook, you can do that and more with a clear conscience. Or not. The whole point is, having a second passport is a great insurance policy against what we're all seeing is happening up in the first world. Which is why I always laugh and shake my head when I hear Latins talk about the sueño americano, the American dream. Even so-called educated upscale Latins think my jammy is the land of milk and honey. I just don't get it. What a bunch of dolts, huh? In fact, I know of no Latins, no matter how supposedly educated, who've even heard of or know anything at all about alternative media. And get this, they believe they're first world and Americanized because they watch Latin CNN. Oh, brother. Where's the vomit bag? But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. For those of you who can't possibly make it down to the seminar or can't get your own boots on the ground here in Latin America yet, the next best thing by far is to take my Expat Essentials course. Check it out. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. Oh, and no matter where you are in the makings of your own Plan B, when you hit a roadblock or need some clarification because everyone's Plan B is a little different, you can always schedule a phone or a Skype consult with me. But first, go to www.thenewexpat.com to download my free phone consult / questionnaire form. Have a look at it. I'm sure it'll help you with a lot of your own ideas. All right, so here's something I've noticed that indicates a very bad influence of first world, well, habits. You've heard me mention that there are hundreds of first world franchises here now. It all started 30 or so years ago with the inevitable landing of McDonald's. Then came Kentucky Fried, Burger King, Taco Bell, and the rest. Now, I don't go to those places. Well, I should say I don't go to those places to eat. Sometimes you have to meet gringos and expats and Latin people at a well-known landmark, and that would be, unfortunately, a place like McDonald's. Say, can you pass me that vomit bag again? Anyway, you'll often find yourself at one of those places just simply to meet up with people. And the chances are they won't be like-minded in the sense that, well, let's face it, how many people do you know who would never eat a meal at McDonald's? Now, Latin people are the worst. They love everything and anything about the first world. They never investigate things, so they all just love McDonald's. Even kids that should know better, ones that go to helicopter schools and are taught by gringo teachers, they love McDonald's. So even the Latin 1%ers or 0.1%ers don't get it. Now, the other 99% of the general Latin population, if you were to ask them these simple questions, and I have, beginning with what's a GMO, what's glyphosate, and what's high fructose corn syrup, you'll just get a deer in the headlights look. Now, admittedly, up in the States, you'd get that look from a lot of people too, but I believe, at least I hope to believe, that 20 to 25% of adult Americans could give a decent answer. Not that the majority of those would avoid that stuff in practice, but at least they know about it. Anyway, the point is here, when you go to one of those first world U.S. franchises, Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King, whatever, it's amazing to notice, to me anyway, that they actually import things like Heinz ketchup. In other words, they're not using the local ketchup and condiments, the local stuff that's actually made out of cane sugar, not high fructose corn syrup like the garbage that's imported from the States. So it turns out the Latin competition, the local restaurateurs down here, use the local condiments with real cane sugar. Meanwhile, all those American franchises are using imported American condiments with high fructose corn syrup. Worse yet, the Latin people I've spoken to about this actually believe products coming from the States, like Heinz ketchup, salad dressings, barbecue sauces, etc., are perfectly safe and wholesome, in fact, much better than local products because they're coming from the U.S., the first world, the land of good and plenty. Unfortunately, sorry to say, that's one of the backhanded secondary effects of the gringo advantage. And what's worse, if you stop into the bigger first world transplants like Walmart and Costco, practically everything in the cereal, baked good, candy, sweets, frozen food, and canned good aisles, they come from the States, so they're processed with high fructose corn syrup, because everything these days has some kind of sugar in it, right? Not to mention all the chemical colorings, additives, and preservatives. So you've got middle class and upscale Latins buying all that crud now. That's stuff they never had access to just 5 or 6 years ago. So who's to blame for all that? Gringos, of course. We brought it down. And you know, I hate to say this, but for the longest time, a very good gringo friend of mine, he came down to, I think, my second seminar now, ended up living down here permanently. And you know, every time someone would visit him from the States, he'd ask them to bring a care package filled with, get this, Miracle Whip and Kraft macaroni and cheese. Hey, hand me a fresh vomit bag, will ya? Yep, he was a real smart guy, except for his diet. Cheese Whiz, hot dogs, Miracle Whip, SpaghettiOs. And for a long time, you just couldn't get that stuff down here. But now you can. Sad, isn't it? And you know, we all have our pet comfort foods, right? Which can sometimes be our downfall. In fact, I remember my best friend from engineering school. His name was Gary. He was absolutely addicted to Coca-Cola, drank at least a six-pack a day. And his second addiction? Cheese popcorn. Remember that stuff? Got out of college, had a terrific job, and when I visited his apartment, he had five or six so-called food items in the house. Cheese popcorn, frozen pizza, Kraft cheese slices, Wonder Bread, and beer. Which begs the question, what's your comfort food? Is it good for you or is it killing you? By the way, in the past 3 or 4 years, I've noticed the average fairly decent Latin diet being supplanted by a bad first world diet. Our bad habits and their ability to buy our bad GMO and high fructose corn syrup junk food in places like Walmart and Costco really are slowly but surely taking their toll on especially young Latin Americans. It's easy to see that most Latins over 30 are overweight, and this next generation of Latins, that would be the millennial Latins, are going to have just as many chronic health problems as first world gringos. In fact, the other day I was having a conversation with a gringo talking about the availability of hip and joint replacements here in Latin America. Sure, they're available. All the first world hospitals down here do them. But in my 27 years down here, I've never met a single Latin person who's had a joint replacement of any kind. Seems like the hip and joint replacement racket down here in Latin America is strictly for gringos, expats, and Europeans. Doesn't that tell you a whole lot about the general health and well-being of the aging Latin population here? Yet, unfortunately, that's what the up-and-coming Latin millennial generation has to look forward to. So yes, you routinely see 70, 80, even 90-year-old Latin guys and gals, wrinkly old weather-worn codgers, often missing a tooth or two or 10, walking the streets, carrying kids, pushing wheelbarrows, hauling wood, balancing pots and baskets full of stuff on their heads. Not one of them with a joint replacement, nor do they complain of aches and pains that keep them from doing their daily work. Most of these guys, the salt of the earth types, don't even know that such things exist. Meanwhile, my 86-year-old mother belongs to what I call the Chicago Widows Club. That's a group of around 10 or 15 ladies. All their husbands are dead, and they left them a nice chunk of money, which is the usual case, right? And every last one of them, according to my ma, has at least one joint replacement, some two, even three. And those things don't come cheap. Each one of those ladies has a couple of $100,000 invested in custom plastic and titanium body parts. Meanwhile, from my perch, where I'm doing this show right now, high up in the coffee fields, I'm looking down into the ravine and across the river, and I see two short, brown, wrinkly old guys. They must be in their late 70s, early 80s. And I'll tell you, they've got some kind of natural rhythm going with those machetes. They're the longtime gardeners and keepers of that big coffee field. Now, these guys must have their aches and pains, but if they do, you wouldn't know it. By the way, they're always laughing, smiling, and fooling around. Oh, by the way, here's something one of those machete-wielding old-timers told me probably around 6 months ago now. He said, for sure, as far as kids go, things are changing for the worse. He said, when he was a kid growing up and a young adult, he'd never tasted bread before. He said the main staple in the rural middle class and lower middle class diet was always tortillas. Tortillas in the morning, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They were thick corn tortillas, handmade 3 times a day. Not anything like the paper-thin wheat tortillas that come in packages that are starting to make their way into the diet these days. He said the wheat in those crummy paper-thin tortillas is imported. Wheat doesn't thrive here, but corn, it's indigenous to Central and South America. Then he said, probably around 10 years ago, you started seeing packaged wheat tortillas coming from bread companies like Bimbo. Bimbo, that's the world's biggest bakery, headquartered in Mexico. You gotta wonder how they got that name, huh? Their competition being those tens of thousands of little hole-in-the-wall tortilla businesses called tortillerias. By the way, these little hole-in-the-wall joints are exclusively run by ladies here in Latin America. Which begs the question, do women play patty cake better than men? Hey, I bet if we started an NGO, we could get a first world grant and study it. Don't laugh. The world is so idiotic, I bet we really could get a grant. By the way, those ladies only make corn tortillas. Then he said, you know why you see those wheat tortillas around at all? It's because the corn tortillas, traditional handmade ones, go stale in about a day. Doesn't matter if you put them in a refrigerator or not. That's why they make fresh ones 3 times a day. However, he said the wheat tortillas, like the ones they have at Taco Bell, they come in sealed packs that can last for months. And once you open them, they'll still last 2 weeks as long as you put them in the refrigerator. But the taste, he said, and he wrinkled his nose, There's nothing like a fresh, warm, handmade corn tortilla. Now, I wouldn't know because I don't eat tortillas. The fact is, I think I have a subclinical corn allergy. Meaning I always feel kind of crappy a half hour after I eat something with corn in it, so I just don't do it. Besides, these days, you hear that most corn is GMO. Meanwhile, the world's biggest bread manufacturer, Bimbo, out of Mexico, has bought out Wonder Bread and Hostess. That means they own the rights to Twinkies and Hostess cupcakes, though it's not Hostess anymore. So they've changed the name of Hostess cupcakes to Penguinos, which means penguin in English. Yep, Penguinos, formerly Hostess Cupcakes, are in every tienda here in Latin America. And they've gotten smaller and more synthetic and plasticized like everything else. And naturally, the package has a little penguin on it. Not to mention, all Bimbo products are ubiquitous down here. They're everywhere. Of course, their number one product and claim to fame is their bread, a lower-class version of Wonder Bread. Is that even possible? In fact, I remember as a kid in Chicago, you leave this stuff out on the counter for days and it would never mold. Now that's a good sign, huh? Which begs the question, how's the bacteria in your digestive tract supposed to even break down that stuff? Anyway, like I said, since Bimbo's the biggest bakery in the world, there's a huge push here in Latin America for them to try to convert the Latin population over to the much more convenient, chemically enhanced, preservative-laden, infinite shelf life, paper-thin, Taco Bell-style wheat tortillas. And you know, it's working with the young people, the millennials, but the old-timers, they're having none of it. So the prediction is, in time, those little tortillerias that produce those handmade corn tortillas 3 times a day, soon enough, though I hope it's not for a long, long time, they're gonna be displaced by corporate, nutritionalist, empty-calorie tortillas. The junk that's coming from Taco Bell and Bimbo.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.